All right, everyone. Tinfoil Matt, we are back. What's going on? Shane McCarthy, Colin Weimer over here. What's going on, dude?
Dude, I'm in VA Beach right now. Embassy Suites. This is probably the nicest hotel room I've ever been in. This is pretty good. Because off season, so we spent, you know, we're not spending a lot of money even. And it's got like
a little extra scratch. Yeah. Tell me about the amenities. What do you got there?
Bro, honestly, it's sick. We have a suite, so we have like a living room, obviously a bathroom, and this huge balcony and a bedroom. And you can see the beach, and you can actually rent metal detectors. How cool is that? You're a weirdo.
What are you detecting?
Gold, bullion, pirate bullion. Booty.
It comes with a flannel dress shirt that you tuck into cargo pants, because it also comes with a pair of cargo pants and like one of those Fisher hats.
And an InfoWars t-shirt.
Yeah, of course, InfoWars. You know, one time when I, actually not one time, but the when Jill went to the hospital after Dylan was born, we were in the ER and there was this like, had to be an 85-year-old lady with InfoWars t-shirt. InfoWars face mask, just laid up with like every wire in her in the ER, and I could just tell she was definitely given the whatever nurse was handling her some gruff. But I was like, respect, lady. But the InfoWars
released someone's face masks. That just seems so antithetical to everything.
Dude, Alex Jones is all about. He needs that money, man. He's got to pay that $1 billion. For being a liar.
I didn't want to say it because I feel like then we're going to be part of the lawsuit or something. We're going to get wrapped into it. Yeah, when I was a kid, I used to love the idea of metal detectors. And it was one of those things where my parents would like never let me even think about doing it. And you were pissed off at them when you were a kid. And then looking back on it, you're like, well, thank God I didn't get into metal detecting. Like, that could have just been a dark road for me.
That's like a triple, almost quadruple-edged sword for you. Because one, they saved you from being a nerd, which not a lot of parents do nowadays. A lot of parents like lean into the nerddom. Where I was like, when I was younger, I wish my like dad was, I don't know, cool and like pulled me to the side. It was like, yo, dude, stop wearing sweatpants every single day to school. Make sure your hair looks cool. Make sure you smell good. Listen to good music.
Take the do-rag off.
Culture. Take the do-rag, and we'll get into the do-rag. So like now, like they saved you from being a nerd. That was awesome. Two, knowing you and who you are, if you got into a hobby, like that would just be your life for like 6 years straight. And you would just be an insane person that had like all this treasure, and you'd be scouring all the beaches up and down the shore of New Jersey. Yeah.
Do you know how many paper clips I would have? I would have so many paper clips that I would have found.
So many mason jars of paper.
I got to be honest with you. There is a pull to metal detecting for me. There is still a pull.
What is that pull? What is that?
I resist it very well, but I don't know. It's just like
I think I know what it is.
The vigor.
That boy is tough.
Just like think about like finding something that is so old or something, like there's something, but then I just see dudes who metal detect and I'm just like, no, I can't be that person.
No, dude, it's team
Tism.
Team cargo pants. Yeah. I'll say cargo pants instead of that. All right, man. Well, so yeah, we wanted to get into kind of a recap of the last conversation. Last podcast was a lot of fun, man. I enjoyed talking about a little bit more of a real topic that we both care about outside of jiu-jitsu, but how does it always kind of relate to jiu-jitsu? And the whole idea homesteading, alternative living situations, just ways to kind of like not follow the beaten path, which is very normal in jiu-jitsu. Like I feel like just by way of you doing jiu-jitsu, you're opting to do something that's so socially odd, right? Because we live in a society where, you keep your hands to yourselves. Like you don't like get that close to other people. Meanwhile, everyone is essentially playing grab ass with a karate uniform on and like calling it martial arts. Like we're doing like the opposite of what you should do in society. But, funny talking about how like the contradictory aspects of me wanting to go hunting, but also like loving streetwear and having Jordans on and probably a velour jumpsuit, which I do have a velour jumpsuit, and I love everything about that, like that duality to it. And I think like having the awareness of like when I should have transitioned out of that, back in high school, actually like right before I got into high school, there was like that, that time where like all I wore were like, you know, Sean John, Rockaware, FUBU. Cause like, that's what was cool. Like I loved rap. I love hip hop. That's the kind of culture I was surrounded in. But I think we talked about this last week with Malibu's Most Wanted. Like I wasn't fully Malibu's Most Wanted, but I definitely like saw that movie and I was like, yo, there's no way this is not how people see me.
You were B-Rad like, G.
I was
can't
B-Rad G. I
was Huck the Gluck, man.
Dude,
Gluckman's
like,
down with the bitches in the hose.
I think Malibu's Most Wanted definitely gave me a level of self-awareness. Like that was my first step into being self-aware of like, this is how others perceive you. And there was no way, like I walked out of that. I was like, I don't think I can like hip hop anymore.
I can't listen to DMX anymore.
Just unties the drag.
I had my great grandmother who she had gotten me a FUBU crew neck, yellow FUBU, like a bumblebee yellow FUBU crew neck sweater that I loved. I didn't even know it was FUBU though. So I must have just looked like an idiot, like in third grade. She doesn't speak English, so she didn't really understand like the cultural implications of FUBU.
Yep. No, yeah, like I definitely had like FUBU jerseys and like FUBU Fat Albert denim jeans, and wore them. But then, like, you know, you look at like E-Town Concrete.
Oh my god!
Gotta love
when you compare yourself to E-Town Concrete.
It's never good. It's never good. He used to always wear FUBU jerseys because it was like, this FU, F your boo. But then you're like, oh, no, that's not what it is. Okay, Anthony, Real Ant Money. Shout out Real Ant Money.
My friend's cousin was like the bassist in E-Town. Or he was related to Anthony.
I think everyone's cousin at one point was the bassist in E-Town. On one of their 17 farewell shows.
Every year.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I mean, it's cool that you realize. It's cool that Jamie Kennedy he literally saved your life from being a meme. Like, your life could have been a meme, dude.
I could have been, like, who's the one kid? I can't think of it. Where he has, like, the Gucci hat, scumbag Steve. I could have been the scumbag Steve.
Yeah, because white dudes who wear FUBU jerseys, do they go to college? I don't think they do. Like there's no shot. Like if you're a black dude, you can wear that stuff and live basically a normal life. But if you're a white dude wearing durags, like you're putting a severe limiter on where your life goes.
It goes like you went to like 1 year of high school, then right to VOTEC, then to changing oil at like your local grease.
I know, but just never moving past that. Like never, like, cause you can have a real career as a mechanic or something, but you're just changing the oil. You're going to be like 40 years old. Just
you got a chance.
They don't trust you with anything else. Did you have a Newport? You've seen that meme where there's that dude posted up like in front of a 7-Eleven and he's got like a matching set, like sweatsuit. That's like a Newport matching set.
Nothing will make me more happier than
to
have that
space on it with
I saw the joke with the gray cornrows. Yeah, that could have been my future, man. Joe Byron. So yeah, that's interesting. That's an interesting sell.
You should send Jamie Kennedy like a message or something. I bet you could get a hold of him. Like, he's kind of making the rounds for all the conspiracy podcasts. He was on Jay's Analysis. He was on Tinfoil Hat.
I saw. Yeah, after Jay was on Tinfoil Hat talking about how he had Jamie Kennedy on, he was like, yeah, he's like, you know, after that, he like messaged me that we need to cut basically like half of this podcast out. I was like, all right, cool. It's just 20 minutes. So just me and him. Esoteric Hollywood.
All right. So this past weekend, I know we're kind of almost pushing up, pushing up to the next this weekend. But last weekend, we had a bomb ass seminar at Hart. We co-hosted, Princeton co-hosted, Isaac Doderlein. Freaking awesome, man. He's such a good dude.
Top 10 guy.
For sure. Nattiest of all time.
Really, really. The most nattiest of all. The note.
The note.
Instead of the goat. He's the note, man. Nattiest of all time. Yeah, I think that seminar was fire. I mean, you and I have been looking for a really good outside passing instructional or outside passing system. Because, like, there's a lot of different dudes out there that use outside passing. Like, there's, like, Tynan's version, which I've been looking at a lot more lately and seeing how I can fit that in. You have, like, Ronaldo, who's, like, just spam Toriando. I don't have the cardio for that. But then there's, like you watch how Gabriel Souza passed Mikey's guard, like, circling all the way around to the north-south position. But looking at someone who actually had a system on it, it was really awesome to see how Isaac broke everything down based off of one single pant grip as you circle out to the outside, and getting their hip flat on the mat. And then from there, that being like your fork in the road of what decisions do you make. And it was funny because you asked him the same exact question I was thinking. It was, how do you prevent the arm saddle, like Troy Bar, right? From them putting too much weight. He was like, just never get that far. Keep your elbow tucked. And I was like, oh, bad.
He kind of like blades his body when he's Toriandoing, or like he's, when he has a grip there, or like when he's pinning. Cause you really have to worry about it when you're pinning that leg.
Yeah.
And he kind of like is already, as he's passing, he's already, cause like when you're passing, you can like align your head with the top shoulder, or so the far shoulder, or like the bottom, the hip, like the far hip. And so like when he's Toriandoing, he's already kind of like blading himself so that he's facing the hip versus the shoulder. And so it gives like, it kills the angle for the arm, the Choi bar.
When I was passing, like outside passing, that blading toward the hip and facing the hip was such a game changer in my passing, because it actually stemmed from having Marcelo show how to pass to like north south. And then I'm just like, yeah, like why would I was noticing like a kind of a trend in the school where people would get just past the knee line and then try and like dash in for knee on belly, which gives everyone the opportunity to counterbalance off center them, maybe even throw in like their legs up and start getting into leg and single positions, or just frame really well on something and regain their guard. So I was like, okay, cool. Like, why am I going to pass just to the hip line when I started turning toward, like thinking about dropping my hip towards their head? And I was like, okay, that's cool. Like my hips are their head. I like that. But then that whole idea of how do I keep owning my own weight as opposed to like flopping or leaning too much into the other person's, that way they can easily off balance you. That's when the head guiding to the hip, like the far hip as the circle pass was the go-to. So it was really cool to see that happen live. And then I don't know about you, but I think like, even though he only showed one system, right? So like you pin the hip and then they choose to either lift their leg up or they can keep their leg pinned down. And we went with the leg lifting up scenario where you go into like a whole bunch of other stuff. I think I can already kind of see the entire system of what to do when we pin, like you pin the leg down, and like the opportunity to go into headquarters, long step passing, smash passing, like all that stuff kind of fits in. And I think that's kind of even where Tynan's style of passing comes into play. But what are your thoughts on that?
I think that I was just going to say that it's really, I think people slept on that, because he just did it really briefly at the beginning because he wanted to provide context for what he actually taught, which was like without going into too much detail, but
go buy his DVD.
Well, he doesn't have that on 100%.
I know I will
on this, but buy Leo Vieira's instructional on this, I guess. But he called it the Vieira grip. It was basically like an arm in leg drag, for lack of a better terminology, just like a leg drag, but the arm is in because you can't. You're having trouble pinning their hip to actually do a regular leg drag. I think that was totally slept on, where he was talking about organizing the outside passing, because there are so, like, it's probably the most, if you just want to call something outside passing, there are so many different approaches with the leg pin. Like you said, the Torreonda, there's leg trap,
like cross grip passing.
There's crazy dogging. There's just
mad dogging.
Yeah.
There's baby dogging.
leg traps. There's like so much. And it's something that I've been so interested in lately is trying to unify all of those systems. And I think that's kind of like his project. I don't know if he explicitly understands that that's what he's doing. But really, if I were him, he already has two outside passing instructionals. I would make them like a series. And then just like, you know, with eight different instructionals, like you're selling each one, it's like a part, it's like its own closed system, but it's part of this larger schema, or like this larger approach to passing on the outside, because it's really, there's so much to do from there. Shin traps, right?
Yeah. I love leg drags. Shin trap. Yeah. I think that, the system of it, and like seeing like kind of how he was, I don't know, one of the first dudes that actually put out is starting to show outside passing content that I enjoy, and that also explains it very, very well. He's very aware of his body positioning, explaining what he does with his body to make the movement work, and how those basic principles of what you're doing with your body apply to the rest of the pass. That's one really big thing that I've been noticing some of the higher level instructors tend to do. Like, they tell you what they're doing with their body, why they're doing that with their body, and how contextually it fits into the move, but also contextually fits into like what you should be doing in your jiu-jitsu. Because I think like oftentimes when we are taught moves in jiu-jitsu, and as opposed to like the concept behind the move, you find yourself like, okay, but how are you able to, I don't know, for example, like I've been showing collar sleeve this week in the fundamentals class, and I'm showing them the idea behind flanking and moving around their opponent. And it's just like, okay, like I could just say collar sleeve and then, you know, work your way around your opponent. But like, what am I doing with my body to make my body be able to move around them? What's happening? Well, one, their posture is dictating how I do that. They have to have a solid base and foundation for me to attach my feet to as frames. And I use those, like I make my feet stronger to lift my hips up. And then I use my core and my shoulder hop to go around. Then I raise my core again, go around, raise my core again. But I have to explain like what I'm actually physically doing with my body, or else like, people are just going to like flop to their back or try and like stay flat on their back and like just do a bridge up and down, and try to move over. It's just like, it's such a simple concept of like, yes, just move around your partner. But telling them how to actually execute that, I think, is the real magic in like a good instructor. Because for the longest time, I got taught a bunch of moves that I had no idea how to actually execute because I didn't know what I was doing with my body. You know, like very simple things like make your toes strong. Like, what does that mean? Make my toes strong? What are we doing? Like toe curls? Like, what are we talking about? How do I make my toes strong? But yeah, essentially, like, I think that's what separates like Isaac and a lot of people of that higher caliber coaches and instructors from just like, you know, your basic like average dude. Plus he had Yeezy foam runners. I was pretty excited.
I feel like
about
he has
that.
A new pair of Yeezy foam runners every time I see him. Does he have like a link or something, like a plug or something? Because
yes. So he's sponsored by Undefeated. Like this Undefeated Athletic Training and something Performance Center or something like that. It's like UATCP. I don't know what
UACTP.
Any of all that means. But he.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So he's sponsored by them, and that those are the dudes that give him his like pretty fly gis, and they also do a lot of like releases in streetwear, especially sneakers, where they do a lot of raffles and draws for Hypebeast esque style of sneakers. So that's where he got it.
I think that's such an interesting,
which is pretty lit.
Like those brands that don't have a niche, they just do what they do. Like it's interesting that he got linked up with them, because it's not your typical relationship. and it feels like they don't have any other spot. I mean, maybe they do. I just feel like
it's actually just him and Chris Howder, one of the like the Dirty Dozen.
See, that's like
original
those
black
are like
belt.
Two opposite sides of the jiu-jitsu spectrum. That's so weird.
Yeah, it is, but it's just because it's because the guys who own Undefeated love jiu-jitsu, and that's where they train. So they're like, all right, cool, we're going to sponsor you.
Dude, that's lit.
I love brands that just do that with
that's what we should
jiu-jitsu.
Do. We should ditch this podcast bullshit and start a brand.
Bro, start brands. I think I dream about it. I dream about it all the time.
Honestly,
I could be like a hype beast guy.
That seems like right up your alley.
You'd think. But I don't know. I have a creative eye for what I personally like, but I don't think it actually like vibes with most of like what's happening in fashion. Like everything happening in fashion is moving towards, do you look like you're in the 90s right now? And like I don't
it's
mess
because
with
it's
that
like
as much.
Thrifting is in right now, so it's
yeah.
That's what you're
thrift. Buy my new thrift clothes.
No, I mean. That's something to be said for that, though. I think it's actually, you could look at it as like a positive, because if you just do it, that's already been done. So people are doing it now. So if you just try to hop on the trend, it's inauthentic. But if you just did something that's so uniquely you or what you find to be cool, then, then like you've created your own vibe.
Totally. I think that's kind of why I dig some of the smaller jiu-jitsu brand companies, as well as like niche streetwear brands. So when Levi Jones Leary dropped his Xanadu gang geese, I was like, I got to get one of these. They're so dope. It turned out I got one that was a little too big because I missized it. And now it's yours. Yeah, but like I just liked how simplistic and childlike and cartoony his designs were. And I was like, cool, I'm going to buy this gi. I don't care. And I know that he now has a kind of a partnership with the Show Your Role. So they're going to like probably build that brand out. Then on the streetwear side, there's these two dudes that I like a lot. One of these guys called Warren Lotus. He got sued by Nike because he came out with these like Grim Reaper shoes that essentially were basically dunks, and he just changed the check to something else. But the rest of his stuff looks really, really cool. It's all like very distressed, acid wash, like really cool. Like, I wouldn't even call it tattoo style. Just like very,
what's
cool
it called? Warren, what's
his
name? Warren
Takes Lotus, LOTAS. He's got some really cool stuff. And he does some pretty interesting drops, and he's very connected to like the NBA. Like a lot of those dudes wear his stuff, so that's pretty cool. And then this guy Edmund Louis, he does these Air Forces that they're like he basically buys an Air Force, right? Then he takes apart other pieces of Air Forces and then replaces the Nike check with like this fossil, so it looks like your skeleton of your foot, but like in like foam plushy pieces of sneaker parts. And I've always wanted to drop like a little bit of cash and get one of those pairs of shoes, cause it's so unique and it's something that no one else has.
It's Edmund Louis.
Yeah. It's called Fossil. I think it calls it like Fossil Fuel or
how
something.
How do you spell
like
Louis?
Damn. I don't even know. Something.
Yeah, but that, again, that's like an old derivative of Nike. Like, it's all just Nike's shit, right?
Essentially, the streetwear stuff that Warren does when it comes to him actually making, like, T-shirts, sweaters, like, actual clothing, none of that stuff's derivative, but his shoes were...
The Jason mask?
Yeah. And Edmund, it's Looi. It's called Fossil Fuel.
Like, UACTP makes some dope-ass shit, man.
They do. I have a pair of their training shorts. I have a few of their geese, too. Big fan of everything
that's
on
that's
there.
That's how to do it, man. That's how to do it. Yeah.
You got to go high quality, man. We talked about this on our gi episode, where it's just like, there's a couple brands that, like, they had cool stuff, but they're... their like actual execution of, like, let's say their no-gi shorts or their rash guards. Like, yo, this is not it. Like, I know you're trying to cut corners because you're a new brand, but I think that there's a lot to be said of just, like, kind of going high quality from the jump, like VHTS, even kind of Hyperfly a little bit when they try to get onto the scene. I think that's one of their more long-standing gi companies. Even though, like, yo, did you see that new Hyperfly gi where it's essentially they just stole, like, the Albino Preto, the A&P, the Puffy really? Jacket one?
Damn.
Yeah, like, look at... So remember that it's the gi that Lizzie has in Sky Blue and, like, Heather Hart.
Oh, yes, I did see that. I did see that.
The Stay Puft. And then they were like, oh, bet you're just going to, yeah, the Stay Puft marshmallow gi. And they were just like, oh, we're gonna make this too. So I think they kind of like, I don't like that either. Like, when, like, yeah, there's like taking other people's shit. Like, and Hyperfly does that a lot with, like, the, like, their blocking lettering is essentially just Nike's lettering. They have, like, collabs very similar to how, like, Albino and Preto do a collab. And then at a certain time, there was a bunch of, like, show your old adjacent knockoff brands, and, like, only if, like, none of them, like, made it. None of them lasted long. You know, like, I'm thinking, like, Iwanu. There was this one brand called Copetador. Yeah, it's just like, no one can keep up. You got to make some cool shit.
All right. Well, that was the Isaac seminar.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Isaac was cool. Yeah. Isaac has cool Yeezys. And I took a lot of notes and I'm very excited to start drilling some of that stuff.
I really wanted to make that work standing, because then you can just enter into it standing and then. But it wasn't working.
Because you can't keep the knee pressure to the inside thigh.
Yeah.
If you're standing. Because the frog leg makes you immobile, and, like, you need to be immobile to shift them out over to the other side.
I think it's like they can hook the inside of your leg and then give you all sorts of weird issues that way.
Yeah.
Because there's just so much more space under you, which is just so disappointing. Like, it feels like it's almost not an outside pass because you're not standing.
You're, like, outside HQ. Yeah. No, I feel you, like... But that's good. I think, like, that layer of how close you are to your opponent doesn't dictate, like, what style of passing you're doing. Like, I've been playing a lot of shin trap passing, or just, like, shin on shin, and then just wedging my knee over their, like, onto their hip line and kind of, like, lifting, like deadlifting them up and then kind of, like, long stepping back or dropping my head into the hip. That's, like, a weird, is it outside passing or is it, like, inside passing? Because I'm standing, but it kind of spurred from trying to get to headquarters. I don't know. It's very weird, but it's cool to see it systematized. But anyway, that's Isaac. Dude, I think the last thing I want to touch on is the WNO card. Now, let's start. Do we care about Gordon versus Felipe? My answer is, like, no.
I do. You know, I'm, like, not with all the... I like Gordon. I think a lot of the people who are, like, who go out and harass other people on his behalf are the biggest losers on the face of the planet. But I got...
100%.
It's undeniable that there are still people who think Felipe Pena can win this. And that is mind-blowing to me. How could he win this? He tapped from pressure last time. I mean, where's the... Like, how is it... I'm actually surprised Felipe's doing this. You're going to lose three times to one guy in like a six-month time period? That's fucking crazy. That's got to be a record. They're all super fights.
After you sunned him, like, multiple times.
Yeah, I mean,
well,
that was years and years ago, and shit's changed. Like,
years ago. You got to grow. I think that highlights a big problem in jiu-jitsu. And, like, this has kind of been my fear since I got my black belt. It's like, I never want to become old and complacent with my jiu-jitsu. And I never want to be like, I know everything I need to know and I'm not going to learn anymore. But so many high-level athletes wind up doing that. Like, how many times have we watched Worlds, Pans, or even at the highest level, like, people are still playing stuff that, like... It's the same stuff they played 5, 10 years ago. they're just, they are super like high level version of the, of playing that, but the game has grown so much. And like the new wave of jiu-jitsu, no pun intended, but like the new, you know, it's constantly growing. And if you don't grow with it, you're going to get left behind. And then you're going to find yourself teaching some bullshit at your school. The next thing you know,
yeah, you know, I don't know. Sus. I just think maybe it could be as a result of a lot of things. Probably, you know, the most obvious one is just they've kind of accomplished things and they just want to make a little bit of money. But I think there's another side of that where you don't know how to get better. Like, because eventually just the hard rounds they stop making you better. Right? Even at the highest level, just bashing your head against the wall is not going to make you better. There's just it's inherently limited because if you're surrounded by a bunch of people who do the same thing, it doesn't really improve the things that need to be improved. It just kind of makes you tougher. So I think that there's just a lot of the people who do this, there's just no framework or they don't understand the depth of the game. So when you see Gordon against Nicky Rod using, you know, inside shallow reverse K to get into a leg entanglement, you just see as, oh, he entered the legs. You didn't see all the little stuff, and you don't have the lens to understand really what's happening, and so you're just not interested in it because there's just no, you don't understand what you're looking at, maybe. And it sounds weird to say that about high-level competitors, especially because we are low-level competitors, but there's no other way,
practitioners.
I don't see any other way to really describe what's happening, you know? It sounds like such a cocky, dumb thing to say, but I really don't know if they understand the rules on that level, maybe. I'm open to other explanations.
Yeah, I think you made a really good point there, where it's just like, at what point do you step away from just like how hard the rounds are, how hard the training is, to get like yourself in shape for competition, versus actually taking a step back and learning how to grow your jiu-jitsu. Like, growing your jiu-jitsu is a very painful process. Like, I think that's kind of where like the ego of the athlete tends to be the most challenged, right? Like, you have to feel like you're the shit and no one can stop you and I'm the best in the world to be able to go and compete at that level. But you also have to be able to be okay getting smashed and destroyed because you're trying new stuff to grow your game and to figure out your game and, you know, take times off of the hard rounds to just drill through scenarios and, or maybe even only, positional spar and like that, like to focus on areas where you're weak. So you're getting your ass handed to you constantly, constantly, constantly. Like those two far ends of the ego are, I think, sometimes hard to balance, where it's easier to just smash everyone and, you know, play your A game and only play your A game and keep growing deeper into your A game. And it's really hard to want to test out new things and try a way to like utilize your rolling time or your training time as a growth period. And growth is inherently painful. Yeah. Growth is always painful. So I'm wondering, like obviously that is where Gordon and like that entire team excels. They constantly put themselves in trash positions, going with the best in the world that they can find, or if they can't go with the best in the world, put themselves in just the worst positions possible. So that way, you know, you've spent countless amount of hours figuring out how to execute escapes into attacks right away. As opposed to like, you know, Felipe, for the most part, before this camp, stayed with his students in his school, which like, I guarantee you,
I think he's been at Autos actually.
Just like, I don't know.
Oh yeah.
He has, but for the previous fight, the one where he quit. Yeah. He was just in his own school. And
I also wonder,
Brazil, so
if someone like Felipe, who has accomplished so much, like the ego isn't just about the hard rounds. I'm just curious about who he feels comfortable asking questions to. Right. Because if you're just relying on yourself,
good point.
you know, even some of the best, I don't know any, I think, of the people that we would consider the GOATs, I don't know how many of them are relying on themselves. I don't think any of them. Gordon certainly isn't. He pays his props to John Danaher as often as he possibly can. Plus, he's got mm-hmm. other high-level guys he's working with, like Mirigali. And I'm sure that they are workshopping and bouncing questions off of one another. You know, it takes a special kind of instructor who breeds a certain kind of student to be willing to ask questions to their students. Do you know? And that's just me speculating. I have no idea. Maybe he's really open with his students and they workshop a lot of stuff. I just don't get that feeling, really, from most competitors. But, you know, Felipe in particular.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Like, I'm honestly, like, we're going to have our good friends Lizzie and Sam come over and watch that. But I'm probably, like, I guarantee you it's going to end. It's going to be controversial. There's going to be, like, it's going to be stupid. Like, you're going to hear Gordon talk, and Felipe's going to have an excuse. Like, if it doesn't turn out that way, where it's, like, lackluster, and, like, if it doesn't make me go at the end of the night, ugh, fuck, I should have just went to sleep. I'll be surprised.
Yeah. Do you think it's going to be long and drawn out, or do you think it's going to be quick?
I think it's going to be long and drawn out. Like, Gordon's been a big fan of that. He likes to, you know, make matches that shouldn't last more than 10 minutes go on for 40 minutes.
Demonstrative purposes, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Or it's just like, I don't want to watch that, buddy. But whatever. That's what the athlete does. But there's actually some really fire matches on this card. Like, outside of, like, you could take Gordon and Felipe off this card, because I don't care. And then the rest of the card's still amazing. Like, you have Pedro Mourinho versus Giancarlo Bodoni for the light heavyweight title. And, like, watching Giancarlo coming off of, like, a fire ADCC run, it's going to be really awesome to see him versus Pedro in, like, a... a super fight, right? Because Giancarlo hasn't had great success in super fights. Like, if you watch the recent documentary that they released on him called, like, Becoming Dangerous on Flow, like, it highlights all of his losses and struggles at WNO, at other super fights, where he doesn't always perform his best. Like, he's lost to Kynan, he's lost to, I believe, Heisam Rida. Arita, he's lost to people on the big stage, but who knows, like, what does this version of him coming off the ADCC just amazing performance, what does that do in this situation, and how will his, like, snaps, dynamic wrestling snaps. And, like,
headlock
snaps go versus against Pedro? Because the thing with Giancarlo, and this is, like, kind of a very noticeable, is people, especially jiu-jitsu players, they don't fight off of collar ties. They get their collar tie, they do their snap down, or they duck their head around, and then nothing really follows up after that. Where Giancarlo had so much success is after the initial duck through to clear the collar tie or clear the frame, he always acted off of it. And he would go high, low, attacking, like knee pick, ankle pick, body lock, you know, constantly feeding through multiple different versions of attacks to really get the person who decided to slip the head tie on their back feet. It's really masterful to watch. I think that was the most impressive aspect of his ADCC run.
I think that one has the potential to be really good. They're not similar. I don't want to call them similar because I don't think they are, but they have some... A lot of the things they want to do are similar. So Pedro Mourinho, known for his guillotine. And I can't imagine either of them pulling guard. So whenever that happens, there is no disrespect, but there's just potential for a very boring matchup.
Well, Giancarlo is not afraid of pulling guard. Like, you watch his first match at ADCC with Isaac.
Behance,
yeah. He made him super uncomfortable standing and then threw off the rhythm and just pulled. Right. Like, he pulled and then something on top.
I don't think it's going to pull.
I hope not. I honestly think he will out wrestle Pedro because I think he actually moves off of the exchanges as opposed to a lot
it's
of people.
So
like I
shitty.
Said, don't
like
move
when
off
you see a match where there's someone who's a better wrestler, and then another person who's just looking to counter with like a Kimura or a front head, they don't. Yeah.
Are you talking about Wagner
Rocha
like versus
materialized
Josh Hanger?
Version of that and like the
epitome,
the platonic version of what I'm talking about? But it happens conceptually quite a bit. Like people who they don't wrestle, they just wait. It's like the corniest shit. I really don't like that.
I think you fix all that just by adding the judo, like Shido rule. Like you have to have X amount of. Once you connect, you have X amount of time to move forward, progress the grips, or go for your throw.
Yeah, I mean,
and you're penalized if you don't. How does that work? How does that work in a sub only fight? I think you just rack up negatives. It's like the unofficial scorecard, so that way when they make a decision at the end, you have
like
no
that.
Chance.
I mean, do whatever they do in wrestling, right? I mean, they have pretty strict.
Yeah, what are we doing here? Like, who can hang on the other person for 20
it
minutes?
Sucks.
Like, embarrassing.
What else do we have on? I can't find.
So we got JT Torres versus
that's
the
it. See, I'm actually
King,
excited for that
Majid
one. That one seems interesting. I think JT's got it, but
I think JT's for sure got it. But Gorilla Hands,
dude,
Majid Hayes has been doing a lot of really good work. He's also another one that's gotten way more dynamic with their stand-up. I think that'll kind of give JT's kind of forward pressure a little bit more of a challenge. I think this is going to be a really good stand-up exchange, and if it does go to the floor, like I don't see a place where Majid is going to like hang out because he is a bit of a half-guard player. So he's going to be looking to utilize that to get up, maybe enter legs. He's very dynamic, and JT is just, former ADCC, two-time champ.
I'm just having flashbacks of Majid's at the ADCC, not the qualifiers, the trials. And his stand-up, his shot was, he has like a real shot, which is not something you really see at all from jiu-jitsu guys. But he was going for, I remember this one beautiful... It was a head outside shot, if I'm remembering correctly, and it just was the most beautiful level change, tossing the arm over and coming in head outside, and I think he eventually transitioned to a head inside so that he could finish the single. But if memory serves, but yeah, no, I think he's going to take it. I like him because he actually competes. he's not looking to tactically dominate. Yeah. He's looking to actually do jiu-jitsu, so I'm excited for that one.
And I'm pretty sure he competed at almost like single trials.
He was in Brazil. He definitely did West Coast trials. Did he do East Coast?
I think East that's Coast what he. Too, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure
he was like an alternate or something for ADCC, and then he lost to Rotolo.
Man, put it to work. Yeah, I mean, what are you gonna do? Cade, it was Cade, right? Not Ty. Or was it Ty? Yeah, Cade was untouchable that day. And it was cool to watch that. Next up, we got Oliver Taza versus Jonatas Gracie.
Yeah.
That one's pretty interesting. Jonatas just came off of Nogi Worlds, world champ there. Taza, constantly in the mix. Going to be interesting to see Taza's growth versus someone like Jonatas, because different Jonatas, but AOJ's
Jonatas Alves.
He like Oliver popped his whole knee in their last WNO, but didn't get the tap, but got the win, right? So I think he does perform well on these stages, and I think for example, Jonatas Alves has a way more dynamic game than Jonatas Gracie. So I think this will be really interesting to see. Like there's nothing Gervonta's Gracie does that like at in the gi that is very special, but it's super well rounded. Like he is like dangerous from everywhere in terms of positional advantage. I don't know about when it comes to submissions what this is going to look like, but I think for this one I think Taza is going to take it.
So it looked like the last Taza versus Mr. Xanadu. Levi, he looked like he was definitely susceptible to back attacks.
Yeah.
Obviously, everyone's kind of susceptible to back attacks when you're going with Levi. But Levi, I think that was like one of his first no-gi. Like he really, that's when he first started doing no-gi again. And I really think that would be a good way to approach that matchup. But again, I don't know Jonas's bolo game. I don't know how sharp it is. But yeah, I would love to see some back attacks off of leg entanglements. I think that'd be really cool.
Nothing makes me happier in this world than leg entanglements off of back attacks. Cool. So then next up, we have Jasmine Rocha versus Amanda Brews. I personally don't know who Amanda Brews is, but I know Jasmine is Wagner's daughter and very much in line of Wagner. She's pretty nasty when it comes to like, I will smother your face. I will try and break your hands. You know, very just grueling and nasty, jujitsu. And I mean that in the most, endearing way. Yeah, it looks like Amanda Brews is a Atos HQ black belt. She did really well at Nogi Pans. Got, I think, gold in her weight, silver in absolute. Saw her on the BJJ Mental Models.
Shout out.
Former, you know, shout out to my brother. From another, Steve Kwan. I was on that podcast. Another shameless plug. Yeah, no, she looks pretty solid. I'm pulling up a highlight right now. Like some pretty good awareness when it comes to legs, good passing awareness. But it's going to be really interesting to see her versus Jasmine.
I'm not
going to
pretend like I've seen either of them.
I don't know. This could go. Yeah, I mean, I've only seen highlights of Jasmine, so.
Coin flip, as far as I'm concerned. All right, next one.
Interesting, to say the least. Coin flip. I'll take a coin flip. Kieran Kitchuk versus Renee Souza. I got all my money on Kieran. No disrespect to Renee. I just don't think Renee. You know, you look at Renee at Brown Belt, Nogi Worlds, made it to maybe think quarters. I'm not 100%. Positive, but Kieran went to finals and lost by like an advantage. Or I know, actually, I do apologize. He did get his guard passed, but you know, Kieran's an absolute monster. Probably one of the best RDLR and false reap instructionals that I've ever came across.
I think it's one of the only false reap instructionals.
So highly recommend.
Besides Craig's.
I mean, there's some bootleg ass ones out there. Like, how deep down a rabbit hole do you want to go in YouTube for your false reap? Yeah, I mean, there's false reap accusations, but no, I think Kieran has really good, again, more system-based, more what you should be actually doing with your body, and very, like, pathway-based. Mm-hmm. Like, if their weight's here, you do this. If their weight's there, you do that. Love that type of instructional where it makes it very easy to execute, and he explains how they execute. From top or bottom, I think, you know, Kieran is going to do really well. Will Renee hit the buggy choke? Probably not. I think, you know, the buggy choke has become, I think, a little bit harder to hit since people are more aware of it. And if someone tries the buggy choke,
that's actually
reverse buggy choke.
So I have some of Renee Souza's buggy choke instructionals. And and I think it's when they... It's like one of the responses to one of the reactions they can give, I think it is when they buggy choke you back, is to just buggy choke them harder.
Say less. Say less. The power, like, buggy choke on buggy choke violence, dude. Who will win? Who will be the king of the buggy choke?
What if
who'll be the king of letting the guard pass just to choke somebody?
What if it just comes down to like an 8-minute buggy choke? Like,
imagine
off buggy choke off. Dude,
amazing way to start the main card. Amazing way to start the main card. If it starts as a buggy choke off in the first 15 minutes, I'm pretty sure it's a 15-minute match. I know for sure that Gordon Ryan versus Felipe Pena will be the most bullshit decision in the world, because just the whole, like, the vibe on the card will completely shift.
Dude,
I don't know. Is the moon in retrograde right now? Is Mars this sort something of situation? With... Yo, for sure. Oh no, just my poor little toad, poor little shaved toad guy. Yeah. And I'm going to tell Lizzie and Sam to go home.
As soon as
they enter
the devil buggy, you're like, all right, get the fuck out of my house.
Yeah, Lee, all right. All right, well, I'm going to bed. I'll see you guys. Have a good night. Have a good night. And then Lizzie and Sam are like, we got a sitter for this.
Yeah, man.
All right, man. All right, we did it. This is awesome. Yeah, I'll get this uploaded quickly. We'll do some... I'm trying to get better at the clips and putting them up. Hopefully now that with the video, it'll be less awkward than just a blank screen. I'm dumb. I don't know how to do this stuff, guys. I'm just really good at talking. All right. Let me slow down there. I enjoy talking, which is why we do these. Am I good at it? I don't know. Yeah, we're trying to do a little bit more content. Let us know what you guys think. Always message us, reach out, let us know. And, if you have any questions, hit us up. Be on the lookout, because we will be eventually doing like an intro to K-Guard workshop at the school. We got to plan it. And yeah, thanks for the support. Thanks for the listen. Appreciate everybody. Later.